people sort of felt that you had to do the unpopular things by the very virtue, like you quoted 60 as one of the things you were proud of, that you had to do the unpopular things in 60.
Well, those are my friends who excused me during those period of times. It was just because he had to do the unpopular things for his brother, I don't know.
How would you define leadership?
I think to really to inspire people to exercise their best qualities.
That's a very good definition. Do you believe... Sorry, you were going to
say... No, I was just thinking of that story about the French general who yelled out the window, "There go my people, I must follow them, I'm their leader." But I don't think that's it.
Here, here.
I think it's the opposite of that.
Here, here. Do you believe in the principle, my country right or wrong?
No, I you know, I think that one has this affection or feeling for its country, but I think of what Camus said during the war with Algeria, that that it's my criticism, you know, talking about his criticism during that period of time, that my criticism comes because I want to love my country in justice. And I think that's what we want. We want to have this affection and feeling for our country in justice.
Would you redefine today the word communist, really? I mean, it doesn't mean the same as it did 20 years ago. I mean, it's not a monolithic international conspiracy anymore, isn't it?
No.
How would you define it today?
Well, I suppose it differs in each one of the countries, really. I mean, I suppose one of the reasons that it's less dangerous and why it's that we have to adjust in ourselves about it is because the fact it's not controlled, it's not just a system that's controlled out of one nation's capital and therefore the kind of power that it had before. But I think it's I think it's very difficult because I suppose there's as much difference between what is happening in China and what is happening in Czechoslovakia today as there is between what's happening in the United States and happening in a country in Latin America.
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, when you talk, if you say the United States and Indonesia are democracies, or Peru or Brazil, and you've also, how do you define democracy? I think it's very, very difficult, and I think that they adapt, the country adapts a social and political system which evolves into something that is either satisfactory to the people or satisfactory to those that are presently in power.
Well, I mean, this, it seems to me, is basic. That one's got to start, you talk about judgment, by realizing that the definition of the word communist is very difficult, because what frightens me a bit is that the way in which people will dub a nation or someone communist without really being able to define the word, and then that will determine all their human reactions, you know.
Well, I think probably just go back, and that's one of the struggles between the young and the older generation. Because here in the United States, because the older generation, and quite rightly, thinks of communism. If you went up until 1960, you think of what they did right after the war. You think of Stalin. You think of the rape of Hungary. You think of the sweep across Europe. You think of the Korean War. All of these incidents that occurred, which showed them the bitterest and most difficult kinds of enemies. Then along came President Kennedy, who talked about lowering the barriers and that we have to try to have an accommodation with our adversaries. And then the Test Ban Treaty, you go through the Cuban Missile Crisis, then the Test Ban Treaty. And the barriers begin to be lowered. And they come on the world scene during that period of time, not having lived through any of these other events. And so that they think of communism as being, in some cases, a terrible system, and other parts of the world, and nothing much worse than some of our allies. But those who are the older generation think back on all of these events and all of these incidents and say, how can you trust a communist, and how can you ever accept the idea that there should be a communist? So that therefore, when we talk in our own country of the struggle between the young and the old, I think part of it at least is due to that. I think also it's the economic problems, but I think at least part of it is due to that. But when you ask me the question, I think it's just, you know, whether you're talking about Romania or Czechoslovakia or the Soviet Union or China, it's very, very difficult.
Right. You're talking about recent history.
I think that, if I may say so, yeah. I think that the fundamental concern about it really is the fact that up to at least at the present time, when there are some of these countries that are in transition, that the individual did not play the role that he should play. and that there was the control by the state over the individual, and existed the individual existed on behalf of the state and with a dictatorship which was unsatisfactory.
You were talking about recent history. Looking back right through history, which historical character do you feel most in sympathy with, do you most admire?
Let's see. Well, most of the ones that I really think about just rapidly are Americans, but I think probably Abraham Lincoln. I think Theodore Roosevelt I admire a great deal. I admired a lot in Herbert Hoover's career. I thought that his career and his earlier career and what he did and working in the mines, his career in China, what he did for Europe after the First World War, and what he did during the 1950s, the Hoover Commission in the United States, were just marvelous contributions to our country and to his fellow man. Of course, the difficulties that he had in the 1920s as part of the cabinet and then while he was president of the United States. But when you consider his overall career, there were some marvelous things that he did.
Let me ask.
Well, another person is Charles Lindbergh, who I admire a bit.
Oh, really? Well, as a pioneer?
Well, just the fact that I thought he was so brave and courageous and, independent.
Which?
And a lot of characteristics.
You're often pictured in the open air. Some people write about you as if you're reckless and quote.
Ruthless.
No, well, ruthless too. We'll come to ruthless, but reckless. I was only saying reckless. Reckless in the sense that some people picture you because of the sort of all the physical things you do as taking reckless, daring steps. And other people say you're very cautious. Which of the two portraits do you recognize the most, actually? Do you think you're sometimes reckless?
No, I don't think I'm reckless.
But you like physical risk, don't you?
Well, I enjoy doing some, I suppose, some of those kinds of things, but I don't think that that's Edith Hamilton wrote that men are not, or Aeschylus, about Aeschylus, that men are not made for safe havens, and I suppose that you know, that's part of a human being's life or a man's life.
Yes, well, I'm all for it. The other, what about the other nasty word you heard,
ruthless.
The ruthless word. Why do people say that?
I don't know. I'm sure you're going to get a lot of people to explain exactly why. I can't tell you. You know, I think that's a difficult one for me to answer.
Yes.
Why do you beat your wife?
Yes, well, ruthless, I suppose you'd rephrase it decisive.
No, I wouldn't try. No. They're entitled to what they think.
I was going to the big question and this is a huge one, but very basic in a way. What would you say, Root, that people are on Earth for?
I think you probably break it down into what to people who have some advantages and those who are just trying to survive and have their family survive. I think that if you have enough to eat, for instance. I think basically to make a contribution to some others who are less well off. Saying that I complained because I had no shoes until I met a man who had no feet, you can always find someone that has a more difficult time than you do, suffers more, and faces a more difficult time one way or another. And I think in the last analysis, if you have made some contribution to someone else, to improve their life and make their life a little bit more livable, a little bit more happier. I think that that's what you should be doing.
Yes. How would you like to be remembered? I mean, what would you like the first line of a history book about Robert Kennedy to say?
Now, I think something about the fact that I made some contribution to either, you know, my country or those who were less well off. I think, again, back to what Camus wrote about the fact that perhaps this world is a world in which children suffer, but we can lessen the number of suffering children. And if you do not do this, then who will do this? And I'd like to feel that I'd done something to lessen that suffering.
In an election year, some people define an election year as a year in which people are trying to find out what the electorate are hoping for and what they're frightened of, that it's to do with hope and fear. What would you say is most Americans' main fear and main hope at this moment?
Well, I think really it's a hope for a national purpose, and I think that's, that sounds general, but I really think that that's a recapturing of the purpose of the country and the direction of the country. I think that's what it is fundamentally, the end of divisions within the country. Not the end, because we can never end them, but I mean the bitterness, to escape from the bitterness and the hatred that is exists to a greater extent in the United States than perhaps it has for a number of generations, and to give us some national purpose and restore the soul of the country. Now, what was the other question?
The fear.
The fear that we won't.
But what is, national purpose is another thing that's terribly difficult to define.
I know, and perhaps everybody uses it when, so I agree with that. I think it's true that, however, I mean, I don't want to sound like a sort of, a speech that one gives in a patriotic holiday, but I think more than, for instance, in 1960 or in any campaign that I've, that really is the, President Johnson, in his State of the Union message called it restlessness, and, Secretary Gardner called it, has talked about it in much more implicit terms about the fact that people felt lost and that the sense of action had gone out of people. Well, and I think that a lot of it's, as I say, we have this tremendous gross national product, we have this tremendous wealth, the economy is going up fantastically high, the individual is making much more money. And what does it all mean once we have it? If children and parents are becoming alienated from one another, if there's greater bitterness between blacks and whites, as there is now, and if we're very bitter and over the war in Vietnam, then you wonder just what direction you're going in and what this all means.
What went wrong there? I mean, what went wrong with, in a sense, with President Johnson, in the sense that he was talking about a great society in 64, 65, and it hasn't happened? I mean, what went wrong with the initiative that he was...
Well, I think the war made a great difference, obviously, because a lot of the programs that were started just couldn't be funded and therefore couldn't be made effective. And secondly, I think we talked about it a little earlier, just giving people confidence that despite adversary happenings in within our country, or despite great handicaps, that we could still survive and surmount them. I mean, you can't think of any country that had a more difficult time than Great Britain in 1940 and 1941, 42 during that period of time. It was the finest hour, as Winston Churchill said. But this kind of a problem that we're facing is so different because it hasn't called on those marvelous qualities that were called on in your country during that critical time.
It's terribly difficult to summarize these things, but I mean, if you had to find, and you wanted to get across to the American people, one adjective to describe the Johnson administration's presidency, what would that
adjective
be?
Well, I'd rather not use an adjective, really. I think it doesn't accomplish very much good, I don't think it makes much of a contribution.
But basically, you'd just say that it, in a sense, lost direction, really.
Well, I think that we have, in the country to some extent, and as I said, I talked about the fact that there are, I just think we can do much, much better, this country, and that we've done such marvelous things, and I just think that we could do much, much better, and I don't want to continue like we have over the period of the last few years. I don't believe the American people do. I think we want to turn a corner, and I don't think we can at the moment.
Do you feel at the moment that in this campaign that you're waging now, I mean, you must overall feel that the name, your family name, is a tremendous advantage?
Yes.
Is there any ways in which it's ever hindered what you've been trying to do?
No, I think it focuses more attention on what I say and what I did, I mean, before I became a candidate. And therefore, there's more controversy about what I do and what I say. Somebody else can say it, and there's not a great deal of criticism if I get involved in it. So I pay some price for it. But obviously, it's a great asset, obviously, because I think people have such great affection for President Kennedy.
Do you ever worry? I mean, I was just thinking, you mentioned Winston Churchill and so on. Do you ever worry about how, I mean, your father was very distinguished, had a very distinguished career, but nevertheless, by the very fact of what you and your brother have done, in a sense, going even further politically. That has done that thing that children like to feel about their parents, that, in a sense, it's topped even the achievements of the father, in a sense. Do you ever worry about how your children are ever going to be able to feel that they've in any way topped what you've done?
No. I think that they'll develop their own lives, and I have a son. I talked to one of my sons about it one time, and we were talking about what he was going to do, and he said that he was 12 years old, and he wanted to make a contribution. And I don't want to get involved in political life. And I said, well, what do you want to do? And he said, I want to make a contribution. He loves animals, and just knows all about it and read a lot of books. And he said, I want to make a contribution like Darwin and Audubon did. And so I think people work out their own lives. He wants to make that kind of contribution, and I think the other ones will do the same thing, just as long as they understand that in the last analysis, what is important, that they give something to others and not just turn in on themselves and decide that they are important and what's significant is they themselves, that what they can contribute and what they can give is the only thing that matters.
Right, because I can see if the different fields could be a solution, because, for instance, I was thinking that Winston Churchill, although Lord Randolph Churchill had a distinguished career, Winston Churchill then went further. But Randolph Churchill has found it, mutual friend Randolph indeed, has found it, quite difficult, in a sense, to find his niche. Oddly enough, until he came to write this marvellous biography as his father.
Which I thought were wonderful. Yeah.
But it's quite difficult. It would be quite difficult for them to find a higher office than the presidency of the United States to move on to, but you think they've got to move into separate fields?
Well, I suppose, but they're young and I would hope that they will adjust. whatever that means. But
if a doctor said to you, and it's quite obvious looking at you, he won't. But if a doctor said to you, the strain of all this is too much, and you must give up politics and live the quiet life or something, what would your initial emotion be? Would it be anger, relief, disappointment, or what? I mean, it's obviously not going to happen, and I'm not cunningly suggesting that it will.
No. I would in this particular effort, I would continue. I mean, I don't think that would be very important.
If you weren't in politics, what would you be doing now?
I think I'd probably like to teach. I'd like to go to a university and perhaps like to read more and perhaps write some.
And looking at the United States in 10 years' time, if we could do it tonight, how would you say it would look different and be different to what it is today?
Well, what would I like to see the United States be? Or
yes.
What do I think it's going to be? Or
what do you think it's going to be?
Because I'm an optimist, I would hope that we are going to be...
Well, we have had 8 years of President Robert Kennedy.
That's just what I would hope, that we've made the areas which I think that we have to really accomplish something is that we've made a major contribution in trying to cut down on the reliance on nuclear weapons, that we've taken steps toward disarmament, that we've developed a system along with other nations of the world to help the undeveloped nations of the world, and that we've established a system within our own country that's so that people can, even the very poor and the impoverished, can educate their children, and that they in turn can find decent jobs and live a decent life, and not be hopeless and not be filled with despair. That's what I'd like to see.
And do you think these goals are obtainable?
Yes. They're not answered, but we can make some progress toward them, and we should try. And that's what I think it's all about. That's why I think, and I don't think if we start trying in 1969, that we're going to start running out of time. Because we have the capacity to destroy all mankind, and we have to start making some progress.
Senator Kennedy, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.